That was disconcerting, to say the least. You hum like that guy in the Crash Test Dummies.
Yesterday. This is Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
A podcast of the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
This is how things work on Facebook. A friend was like, you know what? I'm just going to tell everyone that I like Eels, the band.
Not the fish.
And, this was some sort of weird confession. Which I don't think it's a weird confession. I like Eels.
Well, clearly it was saying he felt like it was a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, a guilty pleasure.
Are Eels not cool?
I don't know. He's in his 20s. Maybe it's the 90s thing aspect of it. You know.
He's in a band.
Yeah, and he's in a band. He's actually, you know, successful bands. And, I was like, I like Eels. I don't care. So I started listening to Eels with the headphones on. And I'm sitting out here humming. Humming.
With your headphones
on. With my headphones on. And you came out of the office and were like, are you humming? Apparently, you and I have lived, loved, and laughed for these...
Nearly
20 years, and you've never heard me hum before.
Never.
How did that...
You don't hum. You're not a hummer. You rarely ever even sing to the radio or whatever, but you certainly don't hum. It's weird. And now you're humming our theme song. It's crazy.
Well, I just, you know, I wanted to... I have a lot of humming now to do for you to make up for all this lost time.
Oh, great.
You're going to hear me humming all kinds of things.
Yeah, no, you can go back to not humming. That's totally fine. You're Dave White, by the way. Film critic for movies.com.
Also for the Monster Society of Evil.
Yes, right.
I'm the film critic for the Monster Society of Evil.
And they needed one.
5 minutes ago, I didn't know what the Monster Society of Evil was.
And now your life is totally
changed. Another Facebook story. I posted a photo of my favorite orange marmalade on Facebook because it is my favorite orange marmalade.
Uh-huh. You and Paddington.
Wilkin and Sons.
Mm-hmm.
Tawny orange thick cut marmalade. It's from England.
Mm-hmm.
Where
they know how to do marmalade.
And that led to Mr. Kurt Holman asking me about Mr. Talkie... What is it?
Mr. Talkie Tawny.
Mr. Talkie Tawny. I don't know what that is.
The Talking Tiger in the Shazam comics. Duh.
I don't know what Mr. Mind is. Oh, that was the other thing.
That was my joke.
You brought up. Then I had to go Wikipedia everything. And I learned that Mr. Mind is a super intelligent alien worm.
Mm-hmm. Tiny, but with glasses.
Ooh. Is part of the Monster Society of Evil.
Yes.
Again, in much the same way that you have lived with me for these 20 years and not heard me hum,
mm-hmm.
you have lived with me for 20 years and never told me about the Monster Society of Evil or Mr. Mind or Mr. Talkie Tawny.
Well, you know.
How come? Because suddenly... This is my favorite thing.
Okay, because I never know with you. Sometimes I'll mention like comic stuff and I just get the eye roll. So
because it's boring.
Well, okay. So
stuff is real boring.
I'm a little gun shy now.
Oh, come on. You know, though.
The Monster Society of Evil.
A little worm with glasses and the Monster Society of Evil.
You're right. Shame on me.
Indeed.
Are you going to introduce me?
You're Mr. Mind.
Uh-huh.
You got the glasses. Introduce yourself.
I'm Alonzo Duralde, film reviews editor of The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick on the YouTube network The Young Turks.
Yep.
This
and then
is,
we got some movies.
This is episode 212.
Yeah.
Because
we missed our... Well...
I was not keeping track, and our 200th episode happened a while ago.
Didn't we miss our 100th?
Probably.
I don't know what that... Does it mean that we don't care about our...
anniversaries? Things?
Well, no. I mean, like... Sometimes I see other podcasts, and they're really sort of on it.
Well, yeah, they'll open each one with, this is episode number 137.
They're really into their own, you know, they do
chronology.
They know what they're doing. Like, they're competent.
Right. Well, I know that
I don't know that we are very much like that.
In November, we celebrate our 5th anniversary, which I think is a bigger thing.
Oh, this November?
Of this show, yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
Because we started in
2010.
2010.
Yeah.
11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, 5.
Yeah. That involved fingers, by the way.
My very good with numbers.
Counting out loud. Yeah, so...
Everyone has their talents.
So a dozen episodes ago was our 200th episode. Woo! And we didn't notice. So anyway, well, welcome to episode 212.
Furthermore, no one who listens noticed either.
It's not their job to keep track, really.
But, okay, it stands to reason, though, that someone out there is obsessive enough and enough of a super fan... of the show, that they would be counting.
I think our fans are...
documenting
our fans
in
are,
detail.
Are freewheeling in the way that you claim to be, but are not. You know, because it's not like... believe me, if we had the crazed super fans, somebody would have started, like, a Wikipedia page for this show, which has not happened.
No one's done that?
Nope.
What's wrong with you guys?
And I'm not asking for one. I'm just, it's just, you know, it's a thing.
Somebody with a little time on their hands, get it together.
Our listeners are go-getters. They're doing things. They're going places.
Yeah, one of them should be doing a Wikipedia page.
They're on the elliptical machine listening to this show.
I don't have time. Someone else should be. We need an intern. As I said yesterday, we need to exploit another human being.
For unpaid labor.
Unpaid labor. Yeah, everyone does it. I have employers who keep trying to do it to me.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, it's...
We'll pay you in old DVDs. Not the commercial kind, the discs that we keep in sleeves.
Right. It's a good 4 movies.
Yes, we do. And then I have to go down to... I've got to go down to Long Beach.
Right.
For the Comic Expo, where I'm doing the Rotten Tomatoes Your Opinion Sucks panel.
I'm staying home.
And I will hopefully be more awake by that point.
I'm staying home, and I want to make some food. I don't know what to make for dinner. Do you have any ideas what you want for dinner?
I thought you had something planned.
I did. Now I'm feeling a little lazier. It's just going to take a lot of energy.
I don't know.
A lot of steps. Sometimes when a recipe is really, really sort of fiddly, and it takes like 90 minutes of steady kitchen attention, like the only time I'm actually calm in life is when I'm cooking. At the same time, there are some Sunday afternoons where I just don't feel like being in there.
Right.
Taking my whole day when I could be on the couch doing, nothing.
I've been wanting you to make chicken and dumplings.
That's too much
but
work.
But I'm sure that's not a low
that's too
maintenance
much work.
Dish either. I don't know. We'll figure something out. We start watching.
You mean I will?
You will. You will, definitely. We're going to start watching Game of Thrones tonight, so that'll be cool.
You mean
not Game of Thrones, House of Cards, That's how early it is, and I'm still on
it is very early in the morning. It's 8:30 in the morning, and you don't like that. You don't like anything in the morning.
I'm not generally articulate in the morning, so
if I
continue to be this mush mouth, my apologies in advance.
Talk about that movie I didn't watch. We got 4 movies we got to talk about. We talk about Maps to the Stars. The Lazarus Effect.
Right.
Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Queen of Country. Actually, let's just talk about Focus first, because that's the big...
Yeah, that's the big one this weekend.
Yeah.
It's from the guys who did I Love You, Philip Morris and Crazy Stupid Love and who wrote Bad
Santa.
And it stars Will Smith as a sort of veteran con man.
He's a con man. He comes from a long line of con mans.
Yes.
His father,
he's a con grandson.
They were a con family.
Yes.
And his father shot and killed his grandfather rather than break the con.
Right.
Yeah.
To look that's like how, they weren't partners.
That's how committed they were.
Yes. To the grift.
Con. Yeah.
To the long con.
Which I'm sure the grandfather appreciated.
Yeah.
As he lay dying.
I have to admire your commitment to the grift. So we meet Will Smith first in New York, where Margot Robbie and her hapless partner, that guy used to be in The Sopranos, right?
What?
The one who comes in holding a gun on Will Smith at the beginning of the movie?
That's the husband from Nurse Jackie.
That's who that is. Yeah. I knew he was from some cable show. Yeah. Okay. I actually started watching Nurse Jackie again last night on Apple TV, just for the...
We got Apple TV for the hell of it. Yeah.
After watching that amazing L-Word episode that starts with all the phone calls.
Oh, yeah, that is a really good one.
God, that is so... Angela Robinson, every time I see her, I'm like, can I tell you again? That's like the greatest 15 minutes of television ever created. Season 4, episode 6.
We could go back and watch all the L-Words if we wanted.
Oh, we could totally do that.
Someone who loves us both very much.
We could skip the Ernest first season.
Someone gave us... I don't want to skip the first season. That's right. When they go to the diner and they all have a sing-along to Closer to Fine.
Oh, that's true. You're right. You're right.
One of the most heartwarming moments I've ever experienced.
We don't know. It was Dana and the Soup Chef.
No. Someone, a friend who loves us very much and who is incredibly generous.
Yes.
More than we deserve. Because we certainly wouldn't be going out and buying this for ourselves.
No.
Because I'm a bad cop with the money. I'm a cheap skate.
Mm.
And this friend bought us Apple TV for Christmas.
Yes.
We're very grateful for this friend.
Yes.
And
since we already get cable, we get free access to, like, HBO Go and Showtime Anytime.
Uh-huh.
So I was just rooting around last night looking at things. And so, yeah, season 4, episode 6 of The L Word. I think it's called Luck Be a Lady. Just if you watch nothing else of this series, watch the first 15 minutes. Well, look, you should go back and watch all the Don Denbo episodes, obviously. But if you don't, at least watch this one opening segment. It's like 10 or 15 minutes, and it's just...
Is it that long?
Yeah.
It's that long?
It's that long, and it's just like, it's people on the phone with each other and split screen, and people, you know, like, on call waiting, and like 4 or 5 different plots spin out over the course of that, and and Jennifer Beals has, like, brings it home with, like, this really great capper. She's so funny in this. What were we talking about?
I don't know. Focus.
Which I clearly have none of.
We're not focusing.
Anyway, so we meet Will Smith in New York, and Margot Robbie tries to pull a con on him, and he's way too smart for that because she doesn't know what she's doing.
She's a relatively experienced pickpocket.
Yes, but that's it.
In the Bressonian sense, no. but still fairly good.
Right. Yeah. And so he gives her this quick lesson where he keeps, like, stealing her stuff over and over and over again.
That's my DVD pick, by the way. You want a...
Bresson's pickpocket?
I'm just going to hit the nail on the head I always do and tell you that you need to see Pickpocket by Bresson.
Well,
Watch that thing.
I might as well.
It's probably been my DVD pick before.
Probably.
Probably twice before. Because I think I've gone all of 2015 so far. These
it's March now.
8 weeks. And not mentioned Bresson. Well, maybe once. But at least not twice. Watch Pickpocket.
Okay, well, my DVD pick then is going to be... Ernst Lubitsch's Trouble in Paradise,
were a better movie.
We would be talking about it, which is also about a pair of grifters and pickpockets who fall in love. And that scene, that movie famously has a scene where the two con artists basically seduce each other by picking each other's pockets while sitting at a dinner table.
Right.
There's a scene similar to that here where Will Smith is explaining about places where you can touch people on the body and distract them. And he, like, steals Margot Robbie's, like, ring and watch and, you know, wallet over and over and over and over again. And it's a very funny scene, but it's very much straight out of Lubitsch.
Yeah.
Then he goes to New Orleans for what is supposed to be the Super Bowl, but the movie clearly didn't get clearance for anything. So it's all this sort of fake football stuff, but whatever. It doesn't... clang too bad. And she...
I think the name of the game is like the Super Bun or something like that.
Practically. Yeah. The Super Owl. So she... and then she shows up in New Orleans and, you know, because she's tracked him down and she wants in. So he kind of takes her on as an intern and she's a very good pickpocket and she learns a lot of the other stuff in terms of what do they do with all the stolen merch and how do they, you know, entrap people and how do you... go to bars and get people's credit card info and then give them the credit card back so they don't even realize yet that it's been taken and blah, 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 blah. And over the course of that week, they fall in love. But he knows that's a big mistake, so he ditches her there. And then we cut to 3 years later, and he is in Buenos Aires, where super rich race car magnate Rodrigo Santoro, who has a barky sort of bodyguard man Friday, played by Gerald McRaney, is hiring Smith to fake out his opponents.
Yes.
And it turns out that when Smith gets there, he realizes that Rodrigo Santoro's girlfriend is Margot Robbie, which kind of sends him into a tailspin. And things get complicated from there, and there are twists upon twists upon twists.
That you never really know about.
What do you mean?
Well, you're not in on anyone's
plan. Yeah. The movie is all about fooling you too.
The movie wants to fool you, and yeah,
and sometimes it does it. I thought pretty effectively. Like there's one definite scene where not only did I not see it coming in terms of like the larger twist, but even little things along the way where I thought, oh, that's a lame-o filmmaking choice. And it turned out they were doing it on purpose.
Yes.
You know, and so, like, I felt like, oh, you grifted me too. Well played, Focus. But there's not enough of that.
Hearing you talk about it makes me want to like it more. But the experience of watching it, I just felt locked out.
Okay.
And, you know, it's one of those moments where you... when it's over and the movie's explaining to you why you were tricked the whole time, you go, oh, that's, yeah.
Well, okay. See, I get annoyed.
And then you're done and you think, okay, well, I don't care. Because I didn't get to be engaged in anyone's process.
I get annoyed a lot of times by movies like that, more so than this one. I especially remember, I think, The Spanish Prisoner, the David Bowie movie. That was the one that really irritated me, where it's at a certain point I just thought, okay, I can't trust anything, so I'm just going to sit back and not get engaged, and you do your thing, and then in the last 5 minutes, you'll explain to me what everything meant, and I'll be like, aha, clever, right. And then I'll go home. This one, I at least kind of felt like there were sort of little mini cons along the way that they could be explaining to you, so it wasn't like you were just holding your breath for the reveal, for the one giant reveal at the end. There were all these sort of little stops along the way that were kind of like, oh, that's clever. I see how you did that, you know. And so that kept me from just folding my arms and totally checking out. But ultimately, they don't add up to enough. And by the end of it, I was not as into it as I had been earlier. Will Smith is fun.
They have nice chemistry together. That's kind of what holds it together.
Yeah, they're a cool couple. I
don't know, honestly, still, though, what kind of actress she is.
Yeah. No, I was saying on What the Flick, I feel like this is still this is her Charlize Theron in Mighty Joe Young period,
yeah.
Where they're just kind of figuring out, well, she's hot, let's figure out what to do with her, you know.
Yeah.
She looked, I was looking at her, like, who is she reminding me of? And I finally realized, Jamie Presley.
She's got that mean, hot face.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of like, you can always...
what the kids call resting bitch face.
Like, yeah. I guess, I don't know, and it lends itself, I mean, actors, like it or not, they're about their faces.
Sure.
And, you know, your face can determine who you get typecast as,
yeah.
Over and over, and I have a feeling she will have a career of being, like, villain ladies or crime people, stuff like that, because she's beautiful.
Yeah.
But she's got this...
but she's not open.
She's got this hard, hungry kind of face. I think it's interesting. You know, there's nothing innocent looking about her.
No.
And it'll be interesting to see what they do with her career-wise. You know, it'll be like we talked about before. She'll bump around for 10 years, because they'll cast her. Someone will be like, oh, well, she's attractive. Let's put her in this.
Let's make her the girl.
And we won't know. You know, she'll get cast as the woman, you know, the wife or the whoever.
Right.
And then eventually she'll get enough power and think, well, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to make my own movie. I'm going to produce something just for me so I can show the world. Yes, in fact, I am.
I have actual range.
I have range.
Yeah. So yeah, so
this movie's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's slick. I mean, you know, you'll be entertained. It's for a February March kind of diversion. You know, it delivers that.
Will Smith is very charismatic. He always is.
Yeah, you'll just have forgotten it by Memorial
even in
Day.
The garbagey movies he is, or rather, everything except After Earth, where he's this weird
anti-charisma,
monotone, barky person.
Yeah,
Generally, he's, you know, Mr. Engaging.
Yeah.
And he is here.
Yeah, no, he's fine.
I like the look of the movie. It looks like a Las Vegas tourism commercial.
It does. That's true.
And I'm sort of into that.
Yeah, it's definitely flashy. And given that they had to, like, they couldn't just go to the Super Bowl and shoot. Like, they had to make up an entire fake thing and fill a stadium, you know, I'm sure, with CG, whatever.
Right.
It had a gloss to it that was fun.
And
a sheen, if you will.
A sheen.
A sheen.
So,
do you want to talk about Queen of Country?
Do you talk about Queen of Country?
Okay.
Tell me what that. I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I hear it's good.
It's good. So one of my very favorite movies of all time is John Borman's Hope and Glory. It came out in the late 80s. It's his sort of reminiscences of being a little kid during World War II. And before that, all the movies that we had seen on that subject, movies like, you know, Forbidden Games or Spirit of the Beehive, was all about, like, oh, the horrors of war and, you know, how they're perceived, you know, through the lens of these pure, innocent children watching this horrible devastation, da-da-da. And Borman actually kind of had the stones to be, you know what? I had a blast during World War II. Yes, London was being bombed every night, but, like, you know, I was a kid. I got to run around in rubble the next day. It was great.
Right.
So it's this sort of lark of a reminiscence, you know, and others. There are adult concerns happening. You know, his mother is clearly having an affair with this family friend, and his older sister, who's like, you know, painting, you know, the seam on the back of her leg. No one's got nylons, and she's out dancing with soldiers and winds up getting knocked up by this Canadian guy. And, you know, and they wind up going to the grandparents live in this amazing house on an island in the middle of the Thames where they go, like, punting every day. And, you know, of course, it's one of those England movies where they lie because it never, ever rains.
It's like a Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
It's always sunny outside.
Always.
Like, where do y'all live anyway?
I adore Hope and Glory. It's a movie that makes me, I weep every time I see it, and it's also really funny, and it's just charming, and it's lovely. So this is a sequel, and I have to admit, I was a little like, really? You're going to do a sequel to, like, one of your best films? Okay.
When's it set?
It is set in the 50s. The lead character, who was like 8 or 9 in Hope and Glory, is now 18 or 19.
Right.
And he has been called up to military service. The Korean War is raging, and England fought in the Korean War. I don't think I ever knew that.
All I know about the Korean War is MASH.
Yeah, same here, pretty much. And Incheon. I never actually
there
saw
was
it.
A lady, Incheon. There was a lady in the Korean War. Her name was Hot Lips. That's pretty much
that's
what
your,
I know.
The extent of your, yeah. Well, anyway, so the Korean War is raging. British soldiers are going there.
Dick Whitman was there, too.
Oh, right, that's true. But Bill Rowan, the John Borman, you know, character, does not get sent to Korea. He stays at home to teach typing to incoming recruits.
That's the job they assigned him to do.
That's the job they assigned him to do.
That's pretty much the job I would be capable. You would, if I had to be in the army, they'd be like, okay, you go teach typing.
Right.
First of all, I'm really good at it. I'm a professional typist.
Mm.
And
the Stars and Stripes need a film critic?
Yeah. Well, no, I would just be a good typing teacher. I can see myself doing that.
Yeah.
It's heroic. Totally. I would heroically teach typing.
You're helping the war effort. And so, you know, he's in the army, and there are higher-ups who are super...
Is he still having a great time?
Not as much. He's having an okay time. David Thewlis plays this like sergeant major who's immediately above him, and his friend, who's played by Caleb Landry Jones, who's an actor I think is really terrific. And the Thewlis character is super by the book, and he's always reporting them for like the most minor of infractions, and so they're trying to figure out how to get back at him, and they sort of pull this big stunt on the head of the camp by stealing this clock that was a gift from Queen Victoria, and Bill falls in love with this sort of like, you know, gorgeous, unattainable, mysterious blonde woman, you know, who felt... That whole part feels so familiar of any kind of like wartime coming-of-age movie, you know. There's always the mysterious woman. She reminded me a lot of Jennifer O'Neill in Summer of 42, you know, that kind of unattainable,
right.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's some moments with the parents, and it's weird because nobody from the first film is back, because it's been 30 years since Hope and Glory, but only about 9 years have passed in terms of the story.
Yes.
So you've got Sinead Cusack playing the mother instead of Sarah Miles. You've got a different actress playing the sister instead of Sammy Davis. The guy who plays the dad is back, David Heyman, but they've given him this really terrible dye job.
Oh, my.
I guess so that he'll only look 9 years older than the 30 years ago movie.
Instead of 30 years older.
Yeah, it's weird. And then Ian Bannon, who played the grandfather so well in the first one, died. So, you know, that stuff's a little weird. But it's charming, and, you know, it's... If I weren't having to compare it to Hope and Glory, I'd be like, no, this movie is, you know, it's a sweet reminiscence, and it's a lovely little bit of nostalgia, whatever. So if you try not to think about Hope and Glory too much, you'll like it more.
Yes.
But yeah, Caleb Landry Jones is great. Thewlis is really good. Richard E. Grant is a lot of fun. So yeah, there's, you know, it's nice. It's nice.
For the record, the first film we discussed was fine, and this film is nice.
And so I guess, which takes us to David Cronenberg.
Maps to the Stars, which is neither fine nor nice.
It's a lot of things.
It's an ugly, icky, little toxic box of unhappiness.
Why don't you explain what it's about?
Well, it's from David Cronenberg, mm-hmm. who I really appreciate for his deadpan approach to, well, everything. And it's from Bruce Wagner, who's a novelist and screenwriter, whose subject most often is...
The cesspool that is Los Angeles.
Hollywood. Specifically the entertainment industry.
Hollywood, yeah.
And how, you know, hilariously gross everyone is. Now, I haven't read his books in their entirety, but I've read chunks of them, and they're...
And he did that miniseries Wild Palms with Oliver Stone back in the day.
Yeah, they're funny. He's funny in a dark, you know, way. This is about...
I think, actually, my DVD recommendation one week might have been the movie I'm Losing You, which is based on...
Oh, they made a film
books.
About that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with Frank Langella and Roseanne Arquette. It's actually, it's pretty good.
So it's about a family. John Cusack is a self-help guru. His wife, Olivia Williams, is a stage mother. And their child, who's a 13-year-old boy, who I don't know the actor's name.
I forget.
He is a Canadian kid. I don't remember what his name is. He is a child star.
Right.
He's like, you know, Haley Joel Osment, but comedy. He's been in a comedy called Bad Babysitter.
Yeah.
So he's a huge star. He's Macaulay Culkin, basically. Mm. That's really what we're talking about. So you've got that family. And then you've also got Julianne Moore as a mid-40s, I'll say late 40s, down on her luck, former huge star.
Mm-hmm.
Big star, just hasn't had work in a while. You know, her career is on a downturn, and she's increasingly desperate. She's also a terrible person.
Yes. She's desperate to play her mother in a film, and her mother had been like kind of this sort of revered actress who died young.
Yeah, and became sort of a cult legend after the fact. Julianne Moore claims that her mother abused her, both physically and sexually. And she is a racist. She delights in the misfortunes of others as long as it will help her.
She's like the most sort of narcissistic person in the world.
The worst example of what, you know, you can be.
And then a stranger comes to town.
And a stranger comes to town, Mia Wasikowska.
Yeah.
We don't know what her story is. We don't know why she's there. We don't know how she
is connected to everybody.
But then later you find out how she is connected to everybody.
And Robert Pattinson, who spent all of Cronenberg's Cosmopolis in the back of a limousine.
Riding in the back of a limousine,
is now a chauffeur.
A chauffeur of a limousine. Who chauffeurs Mia Wasikowska around Los Angeles. And then really
apocalyptically horrible things happen.
Horrible things happen. To who? Almost everyone?
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah. And the end.
Yeah.
So, I say this as a fan, a big, big fan, one of my favorite directors, David Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way, this is his return to horror. Because this is about, you know, people just destructing in front of your eyes.
Right.
And I appreciate his approach. It's very, very detached.
Yeah.
Cold. He has a very cold approach.
Like, this film has a score, but I don't remember it at all.
And so that appeals to me. But I feel like his style and Wagner's sort of more overt comedic self, I don't think they were the right fit here.
There's a weird tone going on. I was telling you that one of the problems that I have with it is that what we come to learn about the Wasikowska character and how she interacts with the other characters and their sort of shared tragedy and, you know, things that have happened, you could have made all those people involved in politics instead of show business and set the movie in D.C.
Yes.
And you'd have virtually the same story. You know, you wouldn't have the child star, maybe.
Right.
But, you know, everything else. And so I kind of thought, like, well, that's like an additional variable. Like, if you're going to make a movie about the horrors of show business, like, the plot that they wind up, that winds up unfolding with them would be terrible no matter what world this was set in, you know? And so that didn't seem specific enough to the other points the film was trying to make. The Julianne Moore stuff, very, very much about, you know, could only be about, you know, somebody in Hollywood.
Correct.
And I think this might be one of those cases where, and we may disagree on this,
I have no idea.
I feel like Cronenberg's deadpan detachment isn't always the most effective way to tell this story or to make us remotely invested in these characters. The whole thing, you know, I felt like I was at such a remove from the whole thing that I was just kind of watching a car accident at a distance and not in the crash way.
I feel like that is true. I also, when it was over, I wanted to know why I had to watch that.
Mm.
Yeah. Why I felt, why, to what end am I feeling icky inside now?
Right.
You know?
And I think it's harder and harder to satirize show business when the reality has become so absurd.
Yeah. I don't really know that there is currently someone, for my money, needs to come along and approach this from a different angle. You know, Hollywood's bad. Entertainment people are bad.
Right.
You know, we sat through it together, turning to each other from time to time and saying, Well, I'm glad we don't live in this Los Angeles, you know.
Right.
We live in the happy, fun Los Angeles. Where we have a good time and our friends are nice and
yes.
No one's gross. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And I know that Los Angeles exists and it's out there, but, you know, I feel like I've seen plenty of movies telling me about it and how icky it is. And you know, message received.
Having said that, too, there are film critics whose opinions I really respect who are kind of into this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that Julianne Moore won the Best Actress Award at Cannes for it.
She did.
And normally that would be enough for me. I would be able to see it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Who knows? You know what? I've had a garbage week anyway, just personally.
Maybe you just weren't in the mood.
And maybe I just wasn't in the mood. I'm not sure anymore. And so
I run hot and cold with Cronenberg.
I might have to go back sometime at a future day and see this again. I don't know that I would want to.
Yeah. I run hot and cold with Cronenberg, but if people disagree with me and like the ones that I don't like, I totally get it. I mean, I think he's an interesting filmmaker. I think he's going to hit people in a different way at different times. You know, I didn't like A Dangerous Method, but I did like Cosmopolis, you know.
I just fessed up to something that a lot of film critics will not fess up to.
That your mood
sometimes
impacted.
Sometimes you're in a bad mood.
It's true.
And you see the film and you're like...
No, but
screw you, It's a Wonderful Life. You know what I mean? Like,
but you can, I think, but some, I think I've also been pretty maybe nicer to a movie than I would have been otherwise because of the mood I was in.
If you were in an upbeat and happy mood?
If I was in a happy mood, or if I was in the kind of...
If you were in a bad mood.
If I was in the kind of bad mood that the movie made me feel better or something, you know, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you never know.
Like, there was that time before Smurfs 2 that I went and intentionally got myself a root beer float at the farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
The screening was at the Grove. It really helped. Like, I wasn't in a bad mood that day. But I knew that Smurfs 2 might put me in one. And so I thought, how can I make myself super happy today before I have to go see Smurfs 2?
I love the idea of publicists now standing in the lobby handing you a root beer float on the way into their movie in the hopes that that'll, you know.
Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer.
That's true. They had cookies.
They had a cookie party before the screening. Right. And boy, did I love those cookies. They had nice blue frosting.
Cookie party.
Yeah. And I walked into Judy Moody and I thought, I am sufficiently cookied to enjoy this film. So,
we can be bought, is what we're
studios,
saying.
Studios, publishers. If you would like me to really love your film.
If you want my best self to see your movie.
Stand in front of the lobby, holding out a slice of cake, or cookie, or root beer float.
Macaron.
Yeah, I can be...
Brownies.
I can be encouraged to have a good time. It does not have anything to do with... audience filler of people laughing all around me.
Right.
Because I just look at those people and think, you're morons. But I would never call a cake a moron.
That's right.
I would never question its love for me.
Or cinema.
Yeah. Root beer floats. If and I had had a root beer float before watching Maps to the Stars.
Could have been a whole other thing.
Might have turned out a whole lot of different.
Could be. All right. Now, tell me about Lazarus Effect, because you saw it and I did not.
Okay, so... Olivia Wilde and Mark Duplass are in a movie like this.
That is not directed by...
Joe Swanberg.
Thank you. That's where I was going.
They're scientists. They're scientists.
Yes, nice.
They're doing science in a science...
place.
Place, and... it's a university, of course, and because they're at a university, they are breaking all the rules.
Ooh.
It's always these university scientists in these films who are like, this is my private research. Call me a little bit of a mad scientist, if you will, but, you know.
If the dean knew.
If the dean... Look, they cut off my funding for supernatural research.
God, did you ever have to see Red Lights?
Yes. It's always some scientist at a university studying like the paranormal. Like,
yes.
It's a whole department. of that. Anyway,
I got my master's degree. Oh, really? In what? ESP. And Bigfoot.
So, this isn't quite like that. They're not studying the paranormal, but they are trying to resurrect dead things.
Oh, well, what could go wrong?
And so, they try it on a pig, and the pig's like, nah, I'm pretty happy to stay dead.
Peace out.
They try it on a dog. This adorable dog.
No.
And the dog wakes up, comes back to life, and then just stares at Olivia Wilde. And then wreaks havoc and destroys everything and eats all the science pizzas. And there's a lot of pizza at the science place. So then some stuff happens, and I guess what I'm about to say constitutes a spoiler, but I don't really think of it as a spoiler. I think of it as a selling point.
Okay. If it's in the trailer, it's not a spoiler.
I don't know if it's in the trailer or not. I haven't seen the trailer. But Olivia Wilde's face with her... Olivia Wilde's face is in the print ad, the poster.
Yeah.
And she's got, you know, entirely blacked out eyes.
Right.
So...
In the trailer, you know that she dies and they bring her back.
Okay, well, she dies. And they inject her with the Lazarus serum. Which kind of looks like melted vanilla ice cream.
Okay.
It's this big white bag of glorp. They inject it into her skull. Which is great. And then they electrify her. And honestly, I'm not making this up, but Mark Duplass's character is named Frank.
Frank Enfurter?
I turned to Gary Cotty. I took him to see it with me, and I said, his name is Frank Norman Stein. And Gary Cotty leans back into me and goes, they can't all be winners.
That's Frankenstein.
I thought it was pretty good, actually. So they, you know, they bring her back to life. And then everyone dies. It's 83 minutes long. It is a complete waste of time. And I had a blast.
And it's from the director of Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
I wouldn't call it a zero-star film. I know people have talked about that regarding how I rate things on movies.com.
Well, you have talked about that.
No, but people seem to be catching on to the fact that's how I do it.
Right. You
know?
But it's nor is it a half star, though.
It's not inept.
Yeah.
It's just crazy and silly and dumb. And but totally fun to watch. The Lazarus effect makes you pretty sassy.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to drag people into your nightmares.
Okay.
To know what they're thinking and say the thoughts that they're coming out of their mouth while they're saying them.
So would you categorize
this... It gives
you
power over annoying people who refuse to stop vaping.
Amen.
So this is, you know...
Would you categorize this as being like along the lines of Splice?
Nothing is as amazing as Splice.
Okay.
Splice is incredible.
Or what's that other movie that you like about the medical students?
Oh my God.
The Pathology or Anatomy or something?
Pathology? Is that the name of it?
I think it may be.
With Milo Ventimiglia?
Yes.
And Alyssa Milano?
That one, yes.
Wait, I have to double check to make sure that's the one. Yes. Oh, God, Pathology. Y'all, this is my other DVD pick of the week, which I'm sure has also been my DVD pick of the week before. I know I've talked about this movie before. Pathology, 2008. Milo Ventimiglia, Alyssa Milano. Oh, man. Y'all gotta watch Pathology. No, it's nowhere near as amazing as Pathology
or Splice.
Or Splice. But, you know, it's some good, stupid fun. Like, I walked out of it thinking, I wish I had seen this at a drive-in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of movie.
And Olivia Wilde is having a good time. Because, you know, it's ultimate evil.
Yes. She's in the Monster Society of Evil.
She's in the Monster Society of Evil. The hashtag, which really only has sort of silly wordplay on its side, is evil will rise. They encouraged you to tweet about the film before the film
started. Hashtag evil will rise?
Hashtag evil will rise.
Oh, brother.
So I did. I tweeted about it. Hashtag evil will rise, will proof overnight in a warm place, and then get a light egg wash and be in the oven for 35 minutes at 475 degrees. I did not get one retweet on that.
I'm sorry.
The internet is broken if I can't get a nice retweet out of that.
Rachel Ray should have retweeted that.
Indeed.
Is that it? Is that everything?
Yeah, and we've already talked about our...
Yeah, just as a reminder, your DVD picks are Pickpocket and Pathology, and mine is Trouble in Paradise. We have a ton of letters, though.
Yeah, we do. Hang on, I'm getting to them. I'm bringing them up. I'm pulling them up into the space where my eyes can see them. On the computer internet.
You are such a good vamper.
And here's... you've just sent me our latest iTunes review?
Yes.
In PDF form. Why did you do that?
Because I took a picture of it. Because you can't like copy and paste out of iTunes.
You can't?
Nope. Why? I tried.
That's stupid. Hang on. I'm pulling it up. Here it goes.
We appreciate all of the lovely reviews we've
got. Is this a good one?
It's a good one. And because the more good reviews we get, the more, you know, the more they algorithm us onto their front page and helps people find the show.
Michael. This is from Michael. And he writes, of the dozen or so movie-related podcasts I've sampled over the past 6 or so months, this is the one I've stuck with the longest and consistently find the most rewarding. David Alonso, make it look easy.
Like Sunday morning.
To be both inviting and engaging week after week, their show has an appealing intimacy. And relaxed quality. Well, as little as 1 hour ago, we were both in the marriage bed. We weren't, you know, we weren't doing it or anything, but we were both. It's really early right now. And the marriage bed is about 25 feet away from me. Anyway, we're intimate and relaxed. After you've listened for a while, it makes you feel like you're spending regular Sunday afternoons at your friend's place. They record the show in their apartment, sometimes including a neighbor's barking dog. Having a good weekly conversation about cinema. I took my laptop downstairs and made a video of the barking dog yesterday.
Yes.
Because I'm fed up.
They're in trouble now.
I'm telling.
Yes.
I've had it. Mm-hmm. I am telling on them. Yeah.
Snitches get stitches.
You can easily agree or disagree about the merits of particular films and filmmakers. You can sometimes go off on tangents.
No, us.
But still bring it back to the subject at hand. And you still feel like you're amongst friends. Goes especially well with cookies. That is correct.
Agreed. That's a cagey observation. Thank you for that.
I like that review. Letter to the show. Dear David Alonso, my name is Joe. I'm a senior in high school and a newer listener to Linoleum Knife. The podcast was suggested to me by my friend Patrick, and I've been hooked ever since. I've been an avid fan of and watcher of What the Flick for a few years now.
Nice.
So when I came across Linoleum Knife for the first time about a month ago, I fell in love with all of the intelligent and thought-provoking discussions over the many types of cinema being released each week, while also learning about different films I haven't even heard of yet. I especially adore hearing from guests such as Ingu Kang, who after hearing her and Alonzo's review of Drunktown's Finest, single-handedly had me wanting to watch that film immediately, and I loved listening to Leonard Maltin. On the show, I listen to your show during my lunch hour and have to keep myself under wraps from laughing real hard, or I would get stares from other students. I wish I'd had podcasts in high school.
No kidding.
That way I could have ignored everybody, too.
Now, look, I give thanks all the time that I did not have the internet when I was a teenager, because I'm sure I'd have opinions following me around to this day that I would...
I do want to mention that Dave's review of Mike Bender's Black or White had me in stitches, partly due to the fact that at the movie theater I work at, the film was completely sold out.
Oh, wow.
At the box office, the majority of people buying tickets were wealthier Caucasians and African Americans, which I was incredibly close to asking why they wanted to see in the first place, given how horrible the film apparently treats them. Speaking of Dave, I have Stray Dogs in my next to watch list. That's right. And after reading about it, I can't wait to watch it.
Stray Dogs is streaming on Netflix, by the way.
So. Yes. I wanted to send both of you my top 10 of 2014, along with my honorable mentions, and hear your thoughts. Oh, you're going to hear our thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna knife this list.
All right, bring it.
Number 1, Gone Girl.
Okay.
Number 2, Whiplash.
Sure.
Number 3, Birdman.
Yeah.
Number 4 and 5 are the disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, him, and the disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, her. I haven't seen either one of them.
I have not seen those or the third one, but you know who hated those movies?
No, who?
Ingu Kang.
Oh, really?
Yes. Hated them.
Well, so you, new listener, you're going to have to fight Ingu Kang.
Yes. Just like we did.
In a boxing match. you get a pass for those because we don't know them?
Yeah.
Number 6, Cinnamon 4.
Yum.
Cinnamon 4.
What is... Try again.
Citizen 4.
Oh, boy. Well, if you were ever needing to come up with themed desserts to go with this year's best documentary nominees... Cinnamon 4. God.
See, now y'all know what I think about most of the time.
Herbs and treats. Spices.
I'm thinking about cinnamony treats.
Cinnabon 4.
That's what it is. Cinnabon 4. More, yeah, okay.
Go on.
Boyhood.
Yay.
Coherence, which I did not see.
Didn't see it.
Enemy, which I did not see. And everyone tells me is so good.
I get why people like that movie. It didn't really do it for me, but I'll give him that one
because he gets 5 points off, 95%.
No, it's a movie that
are we going to be rigorous?
All right,
or
fine.
Are we going to be pushovers?
All right, fine.
Number 10, Under the Skin.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. You're 95% knife.
Yes, and only because we haven't seen the Eleanor Rigby movies.
All right.
By the way, yes. is that the whole thing or?
He's got honorable mentions here, too. Most Violent Year, Force Majeure, Life Itself, Interstellar, Nightcrawler, Finding Vivian Mayer, Goodbye to Language, Inherent Vice, Into the Woods, Men, Women, and Children, Uma.
What?
No. He says, I think I was literally the only person who liked this movie.
You may well have been.
Oh, he wants to interview us for his school paper.
Ooh. That could happen.
Hell yeah.
Sure, why not? We'll figure it out. We'll contact you about that, mister. Speaking of Ingu Kang.
Yes.
I have to deliver the tie-breaking vote on The Duff.
Go ahead, do it, whatever. Everyone's dumb except me.
I liked it. Not as much as Ingu, who compared the comparison, who compared the chemistry between Mae Whitman and Firestorm to Tracy and Hepburn. I would not go that far, but I thought it was funny, and I think it's not as sexist as you think it is, and I like the performances a lot, and I think it's, maybe just because I went in looking for all the stuff that you found in it, and I didn't think it was there in terms of like how the friends are treated and what the movie's saying about young women and blah, blah, blah. I enjoyed it. So, sorry, Dave White.
Well... You and Ingu Kang can just have your own cable access show. Friends Talk, or whatever that thing is.
Girlfriends Talk Show.
Talk about stickers. Yeah. All right, this is from Tim. Hello. Ever since the debut of your new opening theme music, I've been trying to pin down what the beginning bass riff is quoting. Finally got it. The Kalash. The Kalash.
The Kalash.
The Kalash.
The Kalashes.
Cinnamon Kalashes. The Kalashes. The Clash, Police on My Back, which,
yeah, I did not know that song, and I dug it up on YouTube, and it does indeed begin with a...
So you see, Dave, there is still a modicum of punk rock in the linoleum knife world.
There you go.
You're welcome. That's Tim from Baltimore. next one...
Are we reading the epic letter this week?
I'm about to do that just now, if I can find it. Okay. No, wait. One more. Oh, this is also from Tim from Baltimore. Just heard the episode with talk about some of your Christmas presents from fans. It reminded me. I sent some burgers cookies, and I feared you may have thought they arrived melted. No, they're supposed to be that way.
Did we not talk
about the burgers cookies? Did we not thank Tim properly for the burgers cookies?
Oh, my God, the burgers cookies.
Oh, God, those cookies were so... They were so good. Like, I can't even think about anything anymore. Just the memory of putting those in my mouth.
Oh, God. We had no
idea.
They
were not melted, by the way.
No, no, they were perfect. We had no idea. They were perfect. We had no idea those existed.
You're
perfect. Oh, my God.
The day...
Is this a Baltimore thing?
The day that they make human cookie marriage legal. I'm getting rid of you. And I'm going to marry these cookies. Because...
So am I.
Oh, God. They're so amazing. Burgers, cookies, the fudgy, they're like fudgy, cakey. Frosting-y, cakey cookies.
Oh, so good.
They're unbelievable.
So good.
I need an entire box of them in my mouth right now.
So thank you for those, Tim. They were.
I am a horrible person.
They were life-changing.
If we haven't thanked you for those.
Yeah, I thought we had talked about it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Brr. So good.
We never lived before burgers.
I did not. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
This one's kind of serious.
It is.
Hi, Alonzo and Dave. I wrote this email to you just before New Year's, but just discovered that I had sent it to the wrong email address, so fingers crossed this one goes through. I've been a fan of Linoleum Knife for nearly 2 years. I'm an English teacher. I especially enjoy your quips about grammar. The wrong use of the word literally, and Dave's take on young adult novels. Why not just read the adult novels? Your podcast has gotten me through cleaning my apartment, boring workouts, and interminable car rides through LA traffic. I was introduced to your podcast by my fiancé, Jeremy. Jeremy died unexpectedly this past December at age 29. He was one of your greatest fans. I wanted to share with you a little more about who he was and how much he enjoyed your podcast. Before he began listening to Linoleum Knife, Jeremy was a fan of What the Flick. But Linoleum Knife quickly superseded his love of What the Flick thanks to Dave's awesome voice.
Stop reveling in that.
This is how I really talk.
Go on.
I'm just gonna tell everybody the truth, and I'm gonna read the rest of this letter
No, stop it.
I can't say what was Jeremy's favorite part of the podcast, but I know he was stoked when you read an email he sent you in 2013 about the overuse of music in movies. He always listened to your podcast. The day you released it, while I took several days, maybe even fell a week or two behind, to listen to it. Inevitably, this meant that Jeremy either gave away what you talked about in this week's podcast, or he lamented my slow pace. For Christmas, I'd planned to get him a Linoleum Knife shirt, while he had planned to get me Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Jeremy and I were in a long-term relationship for 4 years, and he had planned to move to L.A. just before the holidays. In planning his move, we sometimes joked that we would become friends with you guys once he got down there, as he was a little concerned about making friends in a new city. Although we were joking about this, I think you really would have liked Jeremy. He was sharp and witty and also incredibly humble and kind. He could get along well with anyone. I'm sure he would have loved to have two friends with the same somewhat snobby taste in film as him. Dave, he goes, I'm not just somewhat snobby. I'm 1,000% snobby.
But not exclusively.
Recognize. He also would have enjoyed bitching with you about the oppressive L.A. heat and poorly designed Burbank Mall, or, excuse me, the Burbank Media Center. What I thought you might find interesting is that Jeremy lived with a very rare medical condition that was the subject of a short documentary nominated for an Oscar this year called Our Curse. I'm going to digress here for just a minute. I'm going to tell y'all what this is. This is one of those Oscar-nominated short docs called Our Curse. And it's about a couple who have a baby, and they discover that the baby has congenital central hypoventilation syndrome, CCHS. Colloquially, is that the right word?
Yeah.
Okay. It's known as Ondine's Curse. That's what people call it.
Wow.
Now, the reason you've never heard of Ondine's Curse is because there are approximately 1,000 people in the world who have it.
Mm.
You can manage it, but sometimes it is fatal. Mm. And what it does is it makes you like need to be on a breathing machine most of the time. especially while you sleep.
Huh.
Like, I guess there are varying degrees of it. Like, you can have maybe a milder form, and you can maybe breathe when you're awake, but you can't breathe while you sleep. You have to have a breathing machine while you sleep, a ventilator. Now, the kid, the baby in the movie, who's now like 4 or 5 years old, he has to be on a ventilator like all day, every day. Yeah. But yeah, he had, Jeremy had, Ondine's curse.
Whoa.
Yeah. Here we go. In linoleum night fashion, I have tried to compose Jeremy's top 10 favorite movies. I may have misjudged a few, so keep in mind that these are only my guesses, and they are in no particular order. I received a little help from his twin brother, who also has somewhat snobby taste in film. Okay, so we're about to...
Knife a dead man's list.
Dead life, knife the list of a dead person.
Who loved our show.
Who loved our show. Let's get him.
All right, let's hear it.
Casino, yes.
Okay, sure. Old, I want my jewels.
Old Boy, double yes.
Yes, yes.
Let the Right One In, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Full Metal Jacket, yes. Gamora, you see that one?
I didn't, I need to.
It's really great.
I've heard it's good. Yes.
Taxi Driver.
Sure.
Una Noche, which came out in 2012, and I never saw it.
Me neither, what is it?
It's a movie from a New York filmmaker, a woman, I don't know what it's about, really. All
oh, it's, was, a, it's an American film.
We may actually have
a screener of it somewhere.
Floating around in the screener box.
Oh, okay. We'll give you that one. We didn't see it.
Tootsie. Did you see that?
I didn't. You
I
didn't,
did, and
you
I didn't
care for that one.
No, it's about a young South African
criminal
kid who finds a baby and has to raise it. And
it's sort of like the South African City of God.
Kind
of,
yeah. Bullhead, which is
yes.
fantastic, and Angus. What was Angus? What
Angus
was
is the fat kid.
Oh, yes. That's right. That's right, that's right. Okay, everything except Tootsie.
Okay.
Or Tootsie. Or
yeah.
So-tsotsie.
So-tsotsie. So it's a 90% knife.
Jeremy, you are a 90% knife. That's still an A.
Yes. And we will pour one out for you next time we're... pouring one out.
Plus, Jeremy managed to impress me 7 years ago by recommending that we watch The Lives of Others as our first date.
Nice.
Clearly, I had a winner. I hope you enjoyed learning a little about Jeremy, as again, he was a devoted fan of your podcast. Talking with him about Linoleum Knife is one of the millions of things I will miss. But I take comfort in still listening to your podcast each week. Rachel. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel. John.
We've never had someone write us a letter that
made me cry.
Made Alonzo cry.
And I'm not saying that other people need to do that, so don't barrage me with this stuff.
With crying.
I can only take so much. But we really appreciate you letting us know about that, Rachel.
That's incredible.
And we're happy that the show meant stuff to y'all.
We're not worthy.
Because we're really a couple of goofuses sitting at our kitchen table.
You are. I'm amazing.
And you've ruined everything.
Actually, this letter really is very, I mean...
No, it's very...
We're sweet. Not. I'm not worthy of this sort of niceness. I really am not. And so I just... Thank you very much, Rick.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Okay, so... we're done.
Yes, there's...
You've got
there's
to go.
There's no following that. Okay.
You've got to go to Long Beach.
I do have to go to Long Beach. So we thank you, as always, for listening. Check out the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode of the Poseidon Adventure that we posted recently with our friend Brian Boskind, who knows a whole bunch of things about that movie. It's available for $1.99. Just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also pick up our other extra episodes for $1.99 each, Josie and the Pussycats, Clue, Two for the Road, The Apple, and of course, if you feel Christmassy, White Christmas, and Santa Claus.
It's March.
Yeah, I know, but it's the country.
Anybody feeling Christmas?
A lot of the country is blanketed in snow.
Yeah, they're fed up.
Snow.
They hate snow. They hate that snow like I hate those damn dogs downstairs.
Snow.
They hate that snow like I hate those damn dogs' owners downstairs.
Fair enough. Anyway, if you want to while away your snow days with our other commentaries, though, you know, drop us a PayPal and we'll shoot them out to you. Of course, we urge you to check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com, listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, Malton on Movies, and The Canon over at Wolf Pop. I was on the Crossing the Streams podcast this week, by the way, with the folks from Crack.com and Movie Pilot, and my old buddy from The Wrap, who's now at Bloomberg, Lucas Shaw, talking about the Oscars and talking about the film industry in general. So I put the link on our Facebook page, but if you look for the Crossing the Streams podcast, I'm on episode number 2. Of course, check out the B Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, The Schmoes Know, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Of course, thank you to Blue for our wonderful theme music that Dave hummed
even though
over.
Apparently he stole it from The Clash.
No. You can find out more about his amazing work at Bluetopia.com, Bleutopia. Once again, do leave us a review at iTunes. It really does help us a lot, and you can subscribe to the program there. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com and leave us thumbs up there as well.
Thumb ups.
Attorneys General. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. On Facebook also, by the way, there's a Linoleum Knife listeners group where our fans talk about movies and such. And yes. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. I haven't posted a new old episode in a while, but I will get to that soon.
Do it.
And of course, you can email
us. Why do I have to do everything?
It's funny because you don't do anything. You can email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, but stop making me cry. And yeah, this was lovely. We'll catch you guys next week.
Goodbye.